My name is Jan Tielens. I work at UTU in Belgium. We're a training company, and we're training, of course, on SharePoint 2010. And you can find my weblog over here together with the UTU website. Now, what do we have on our agenda for the session for today? Well, first of all, I would like to introduce you to some of the client-side scenarios that may be worthwhile knowing about in the context of SharePoint. And I'm going to talk about what we had in SharePoint 2007. And we're going to see, and maybe you already experienced it yourself, that, well, in SharePoint 2007, we've got, let's call them, some challenges related to working with SharePoint data on our clients. Of course, we're going to see how those challenges are actually solved in SharePoint 2010. I'm going to introduce you to the client-side object models, which are brand new. And I'm going to discuss the architecture of them, and we're going to learn how they actually work. And after that, we're going to see some examples in the three different flavors of the client-side object models. First of all, I'm going to show you some code in plain.NET that you can make use of, for example, in Windows applications or WPF applications and so on. We also have a client-side object model that we can make use of in Silverlight. I'm going to show you a little bit of Silverlight as well. And of course, we can also make use of the client-side object model in JavaScript or ECMAScript, as it's being called over here as well. So what are the client-side scenarios that I would like to talk about today? Well, I think everybody that's in this room already knows that, well, probably the most important client to access SharePoint data is your web browser. So if you would like to, I don't know, create a task, you just open up your browser, you navigate your task list, you click Create New Item, and you fill out the information and so on. Also, if you would like to access that same task, typically you use your browser to access all of that data. Now, the web browser, as you probably know, is not the only client that you can make use of to work with SharePoint data. You can also make use of Office applications to work with SharePoint data. Maybe the most basic example is that you can open up Word, create a Word document, and save that Word document directly into a document library. So you're actually accessing SharePoint without making use of that web browser. Or you can synchronize your task list in Outlook and do all kind of stuff with those tasks, even when you're not connected to your SharePoint server. Of course, the Office applications typically are not created by yourself, but it is possible. It's an extensibility option in SharePoint to actually build your own applications that work with SharePoint data as well. For example, build a Windows application that visualizes those tasks that we entered in the task list, and build maybe, I don't know, a Silverlight application that allows you to create quickly those tasks in the task list. So I think it's a very interesting scenario to have the opportunity to build an application that works with data inside SharePoint. Now, what is the SharePoint 2007 story inside this context? If you check out this diagram, what do we see over there? Well, on the top, on the SharePoint server, we've got that very big SharePoint content database. And I already showed you, sorry, I already talked about the web user interface that we typically used by making use of a web browser, of course, to access the SharePoint data. Now, what can we do already in SharePoint 2007? We can make use of the server-side object model to build a typically .NET application to access our SharePoint data. Now, for the people that think they're maybe a little bit smarter than this diagram, and they guess, well, I've got an application running on my server. That application can connect to the SharePoint database directly. Well, I would advise you to not do that. It's not a very good idea for a couple of reasons. You know, the SharePoint content database is just a SQL Server database. First of all, is there already somebody in this room who dared to open up the SharePoint content database? Did you like it? No. And there you will find that very famous user data table with, I don't know, like 256 columns for text fields and 256 columns for number fields and so on. So working with the data directly in the content database is, well, let's call it a challenge as well. Second reason why it's not a good idea to work with that content database directly, well, the content database is actually owned by Microsoft, so they can decide maybe to add a table, to update a column, or to remove a column, that kind of stuff. And if your code relies on the column that is changing, well, of course, your code can fail with a service pack or with a hotfix created by Microsoft. And the third reason is maybe the most important reason to not make use of the object mo sorry, to not make use of the SharePoint content database directly. And it's the fact that, well, you're not supported anymore if you do so. If you have some issues with SharePoint and you need to call product support services from Microsoft, and those guys come in, and the first thing that they will do is they will check if you're running in a supported scenario, and if they notice that you have code that is actually accessing the content database directly, even if it's only reading data, well, they will tell you, okay, you're on your own, it's not our problem anymore. So as a SharePoint developer, I always say, you know the SharePoint content database is there, but you don't touch it, you don't look at it, you just know that your data goes in that database. So as already mentioned, we've got the server-side object model, which is actually a layer between our application that will allow us to, well, make use of plain.NET code. You probably know the SPWeb, SPSide classes to access the data in that content database. Now, the downside of the object model that we had in SharePoint 2007 was that it was only available, or that it is still only available, on the server. That means that the client application that I drew on this diagram cannot be moved to your client. So you need to execute an application that makes use of the server-side object model of SharePoint 2007 directly on a SharePoint server. The only option that we had in SharePoint 2007 to work with SharePoint data on the client was by making use of the web services that are available out of the box. You probably know the virtual directory /vti/bin/lists.asmx/web.asmx and so on. So that's basically the story that we had in SharePoint 2007. Now, of course, there must be some drawbacks related to this story. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a session today. What are the drawbacks? I already mentioned server-side object model is available only on the server. And the web services, well, let's say, it's also sometimes a challenge to make use of them. And why is that? Well, if you write code that accesses a SharePoint web service and you get a return value, for example, and maybe you write some code that needs to get all the tasks from a task list, well, the return value that you get from that web service is plain XML. And you may be thinking, well, isn't that always the case when you're working with web services? Well, it is not, because usually when you call a web service and you get a return value, and that data is sent in plain XML over the wire. But typically in your client, that XML is deserialized back into objects, and then you can work with the objects in your code, and not with SharePoint data. So if you would like to have all the tasks from a task list, well, SharePoint will give you all those tasks in just plain XML, and you need to parse that XML in your application yourself. So basically, you need to write some XPath statements, or you need to make use of link to XML. So it can be done, of course, but it's much more difficult compared to the server-side object model. One thing that I didn't mention on my diagram is the fact that besides the web services that we have to communicate with our SharePoint server from the clients, there is also a protocol which is not very popular nowadays anymore, I think. It's called FrontPage RPC, and that's a protocol that was coming from FrontPage in the early days. That's still available in SharePoint 2007 and in SharePoint 2010. It's, by the way, that protocol that is also being used by your Office clients to communicate to SharePoint. As a developer, you can also make use of that protocol, but in that case, you need to build your HTTP requests yourself and send them to SharePoint and get the result, pass that result yourself as well. If you're interested, by the way, in FrontPage RPC on Coplex, there is a project that you can go to and download that is actually a wrapper around FrontPage RPC. Now, what's new with SharePoint 2010 for this story? Well, I already mentioned in SharePoint 2010, that's what this session is about mainly, we've got object models that are available on the client. So what we can do is we can build an application, .NET application, that runs on your client machines that will access data that is stored in SharePoint without making use of the web services directly, but by making use of that very nice client-side object model. And the good news is that, well, a couple of technologies are supported. I already mentioned we've got support for plain.NET, for Silverlight, and for JavaScript. Now, when I'm going to talk in this session about those client-side object models, we're going to see that Microsoft had two very clear design goals when they thought about the concepts and the architecture for all of this. And the first design goal is consistency. And what do we mean with consistency? Well, we're going to see that the code that you need to write to access data using the client-side object model will resemble quite a lot of code that you need to write to access data by making use of the server-side object model that we have in SharePoint 2007 and also in SharePoint 2010. So developers that are used to work with SP Site, SP Web, SP List Item, SP List, you name it, well, you will find similar classes in the object model of SharePoint, the client-side object model of SharePoint 2010. So it will be, well, quite easy to get started. Also, consistency means that, well, the code that you need to write for working with the client-side object model in Silverlight resembles quite a lot the code that you need to write in a Windows application using .NET CLR to access the client-side object model. So you don't have to study the client-side object model purely for Silverlight or purely for .NET. You will see that the code is resembling quite a lot across those three different platforms. Efficiency is also very, very important. And what do we mean with efficiency? Well, it's of course about building fast applications that have very good response time, that kind of stuff. Now, how can we get very fast, very efficient applications? Well, there are two things that are important. First of all, very obvious, you need to minimize the data, the amount of data that is sent over the wire. So, for example, if you have a task list, and you've got, I don't know, like 200 tasks, and you're retrieving data from that task list, and you're only interested in, well, getting all the open tasks. You don't get all the tasks to your client, and you filter on your client. No, you get a query that will filter on those tasks already on the server. Also important related to efficiency is, of course, the amount of round trips that we have from our client to our server. So every time that we've got a call from our client application to the server, that is going to cost us some performance. So the more that you can do in one request, the more data that you can get in return in one return value, of course, the better it will be for the performance of your application. So keep those two design goals, efficiency and consistency, in mind. I will come back to those when I'm going to discuss the architecture, when I'm going to walk you through my code and my demos. Okay, so this is the architecture already. Once again, what do we see? At the top right, we've got the SharePoint data that is still sitting in that very exciting SharePoint content database. We still have the server-side object model, the same as we had in SharePoint 2007. We've got that one in SharePoint 2010 as well. Another thing that we will recognize are the web services. We still have them in SharePoint 2010, so code that you wrote for SharePoint 2007 accessing the web services, well, that same code will still run on top of SharePoint 2010 websites. I tried it and I didn't find any breaking issues whatsoever. So you can still build the same client applications as you used to do for SharePoint 2007 if you want to. The new thing, of course, is the thing that sits in the middle. Now, we've got the object model, the client-side object model. Now, the client-side object model actually consists of two big parts. You've got the client-side object model that lives on the client, but you also have the client-side object model, the server part of that one, because the client-side object model, of course, needs to talk to your server. So what do you need to do if you are going to build an application that is going to make use of the client-side object model? You add a reference to it, and that's that first green block. And then if you are going to make use of that object model to actually get to your data, well, the client-side object model will translate your calls into maybe a web service call, talk to the server side, get a return value, and pass that return value to your code in a nice object, as we're going to see in my demo. Now, remember, the design goal, one of the design goals was efficiency. And this is a very good illustration of that concept and how Microsoft thought about allowing you to build very efficient applications in terms of network traffic, performance, and so on. If you're going to build a client-side application that uses the client-side object model, in your code, typically, you're going to build up a sequence of commands. Maybe command number one can be like create an item. Command number two can be, update a list item. And the third command can maybe delete a list item. Now, the beauty of the client-side object model is that you can, well, group those commands and send those commands as a batch to your server. So it's not per command that you will actually make a request to your server. No, you can batch them, send them as a batch to your server. And the server, of course, is going to process your commands one by one. And all the result values, the results of those queries or those operations that you've got, of course, they are sent back to your client as one response value. So this structure, the demo, or better, the example that I talked you through, could have been implemented with, let's say, three different request response cycles, but of course, it's much more efficient if you can package everything in one big request and get the response. The overhead will be much smaller. Now, in terms of the protocols and the data types that are being sent from your client to your server and from the server back to your client, if you're interested in that kind of stuff, when your client application is going to make a request to your server, the data that will be sent from your client to your server is plain XML. And the result value that we get from the server and process it in our client is in the format of JSON. You know JSON, you can compare a little bit with XML notation, smaller than, you know, the brackets. Well, instead of having those brackets, we've got curly brackets. And the notation is just shorter to optimize the load on the network traffic even more. Now, if you're not interested in XML and JSON, you don't see that. It's transparent. That's exactly what the object model is going to try to do for you. You just make calls to methods inside the object model, and if you don't care, you don't have to know what's happening behind the scenes. But this is, of course, a thing that you're going to see when you make use of, for example, tools like Fiddler that will allow you to see the requests that are being sent from your client to your server, so that are those protocols. Okay, enough talk. Let's get started writing some real code. And the first code snippets, the first demos that I would like to show to you are related to the client-side object model in the .NET that you can make use of in the .NET framework. So where can you find the client-side object model for the .NET framework? Well, if you go to what they now call the SharePoint root, and that's that very long folder that every SharePoint developer should know by heart, Program Files, Common Files, Microsoft Shared, Web Server Extensions, and then 14, not 12 anymore. That was SharePoint 2007. And in the ICP folder, you can find two assemblies. The first one is called Microsoft SharePoint.client.dll. The second one is Microsoft SharePoint Runtime.dll. And you need to add a reference to both of them in your client application. So that's typically the first thing that you do, add a reference to those two assemblies, and you're good to go to get started. You can see the file sizes of those two assemblies displayed as well, around 300K and around, let's say, 150K, something like that. And of course, your client applications should have local copies of those assemblies. Now, you may think, well, that's quite a lot of data in terms of distributing your application, that kind of stuff. Well, if you compare that to the size of the server-side object model, which is more than 15 megabytes, I think it's quite okay. Okay. Cool. This is my first code snippet. You're going to notice in my slides, I dumped pretty much all of my code that I would like to show to you. I'm not going to talk you through that code in slides. I will show you the code in real demos, and everybody should cross his fingers that everything goes okay. I just included some code snippets in my slides as well, so if you're interested, you can try it tonight at home, for example, or something like that. Okay, so first of all, let me show you what I prepared. I've got over here a very basic SharePoint list with, in this case, four different records. You can see it's a custom list, which is called trainers in my demo site over here. You can see the demo site is actually a top-level website on the URL demos.utucourse.com. And for every trainer, I'm storing his favorite technology, the city that the trainer is living in, and the country that the trainer is living in. So apparently everybody at UTU is living in Belgium, or those trainers over here. That's my demo data. This is some demo data that I would like to query by making use of my sample code. The next thing that I did already is I created a brand new console application. Now, I know that a console application is not very sexy in terms of user interface, of course, but this is going to allow me to explain some of the concepts related to the client-side object model, and later on in the session, we're going to talk some more about SilverLight and also JavaScript, which should result in some more interesting user interfaces, let's say. no code in my main method. The other thing that I did, remember, we need to have a reference to the object models of SharePoint. So I've got a reference to SharePoint client, and I've got a reference to SharePoint.client.runtime. That were the assemblies that you could find in the SharePoint root. Okay, so far so good. Let's write some code over here. And the first thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to make use of a class which is called client context. And this class is actually coming from the namespace Microsoft.SharePoint.client. And we just create a client context by defining a new instance of it. And over there, we can make use of the URL of the website that we're targeting, like this. Now, if you have used the server-side object model in SharePoint 2007, I hope you are aware of the fact that, well, you should use dispose here and there. Actually everywhere, you also need to do that in your client-side object model, so you're going to notice that client context implements the idisposable pattern, so when you're done, you can do client context.dispose explicitly, but I hope you guys already know that you can make use of a using statement for that as well, which is going to do the disposing automatically with a try-catch block. Well, you get the story. Okay, so the client context is the class that will give us access to the data, in this case coming from that SharePoint site. The next thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to get a reference to a class called web, and I'm going to specify, well, the context.web property. If you're used to working with the server-side object model, you would have expected to see SPWeb properly. Well, it's not. This class is just called web, not SPWeb anymore. And I can get access, for example, to a list as well, as equal to my web.lists, for example, .getListByTitle. And let's say we would like to get the trainers list. You can get list by IDs, whatever. But this is just by using the name of that list. Now, remember my slide in which I try to explain to you how efficient the SharePoint client-side object model could be. Well, if I would execute this code, and if we would make use of Fiddler to see all the requests that were made from our client to our server, at this point in time, you will not see any request being fired off to your server. To actually have a request being fired off to your server, you explicitly need to call a method or your context, which is called execute query. So that's going to trigger a request to your server. Now, of course, you need to specify which commands you would like to send to your server. And you can do that by making use, once again, of your client context. And over there, we've got a load method. So we can say, well, please load the instance called web, which is that empty web instance that I've created, and please load over here my list. Oops, my list as well. Okay, so we send the data, we get the data back, and then I can do something very basic: console.writeline. Maybe first of all the web.title and the console.writeline. Maybe the list.title. And maybe we can do the item count as well. So you see you've got full IntelliSense, just like the server-side object model. It's a real object model, of course. And at the end, we do a console.readline so I can actually show you the result. So far, so good. Let's press F5 and see the result. You can see this very sexy user interface. The title of my site was Demos. The title of the list was Trainers. And in the Trainers list, we've got four items. Can see you guys that you guys are not yet impressed, but yeah. Question?
Does it get every property?
That's a very good question, and you're ruining my surprise a little bit. But no, it's okay. Okay, now I will discuss your question in a second. That's actually my next slide. Remember, we need to think about efficiency. The code that I just showed you, it works, so it's okay. But the code that I just showed you will actually get every single property for your web, and it will get every single property of your list instance. So in my code example, way too much information. If you would make use of a tracing tool and you would see the request, you would actually see a lot of data being sent from your server back to your client. And if you already know, I'm only going to make use of the title property of my web, and I'm only going to make use of the title and my item count of my list. Well, it makes sense to tell that to the client-side object model. So the client-side object model will actually make sure that only the data that you're interested in is being sent from your client, from your server back to your client. And you can do that by making use of the following syntax. So over here, when I go to my load, I can specify for my web, I would like to make use of my web title. This is a little nifty Lambda expression. As a SharePoint developer, as a SharePoint 2010 developer, if you've never heard about Lambda expressions, this may be a thing that you would like to check out because, well, they're pretty much everywhere. So let's go for a list, the list.title, and the list.itemCount. So if I execute my code again, you will see the result is exactly the same, but it was much faster. You noticed? No. You don't notice with this data, but you have to believe me, if you would make use of Fiddler or any tracing tool, you would actually see that the response value would get much smaller, and only those three different property values will be sent from your server back to your client, which is, of course, a very good thing. Now, to actually prove to you that it is true, what I can do is I can specify, well, let's remove the item count. I'm making use of the item count in my code, but it's not loaded anymore. So if I execute my code, we will see that we get an exception, and the exception is over here, property or field not an initialized exception. So that's the exception that you get when you try to access a property that is not initialized yet. It's not empty, but you hit a real exception, which is, I think, pretty good, of course. Well, not that you've got exceptions, but that it's not a null, for example, or an empty value. Okay, so far so good. The next thing that I would like to do is I would like to show you how you can load data from SharePoint lists, and because that is probably a thing that you will do quite a lot. You've got a list with some very interesting data, and you would like to see that data also in your client application. And what you can do is you can just make use of your list item collection on your list and load all the list items from that task list, whatever, and show them in your client application. But usually, you're not interested in all the list items, but you're only interested in a subset of the data that is stored in SharePoint. Compare it with querying a database. If you would like to query a database, then typically you also have a where clause in your SQL select statement. Well, if you make use of the client-side object model in SharePoint 2010, and you would like to build a query that will get data from your lists or document libraries, whatever, and reuse that data in your client application, well, you still need to make use of CAML queries. And if you guys have, or girls, have ever worked with SharePoint as a developer, you're probably already familiar with building CAML queries. CAML stands for Collaborative Application Markup Language, which is basically an XML language that you can compare, in this case, a little bit with, well, building select statements for SharePoint data. CAML queries, as I said, XML. You can see a small example of that over here. Now, if you're a little bit lazy, like I am, and you don't like to write that XML yourself, we at UTU have built a quite nice tool, I think, that will allow you to generate such a CAML query by just clicking. So if you know all the syntax by heart, feel free to use it, but you can also generate that by making use of tools. So let me show you a small code snippet of this as well. Okay, let's remove all of this. So we're going to build a new CAML query. And I'm going to speed up things a little bit by grabbing some preparations that I did. Well, not too much. Okay, so let me talk you through the code. I get a reference to my list. It's the same list, the trainers. I build a CAML query, and I will set the view XML of my query, CAML query. And this is the way how you actually read a CAML query. In this case, we're going to check the field with the name title. If that field contains a value, which is of the type text, E. So I'm going to check if the title field of the trainers list contains an E, And that's, well, the results that we're interested in. Instead of contains, you can also make use of begins, widths, and, well, the typical operators, greater than, smaller than, that you know from SQL select statements, for example. How can we actually execute our query? Well, I can make use of our list, which is, of course, the list trainers. The get items method, in which you can pass in a reference of the query instance, and the result that you get is a list item collection. And that's the thing that you know for sure from the server-side object model of SharePoint 2007 as well. It was called SP list item collection. And then, of course, we need to specify we would like to load the items, and then we're going to execute the query that will actually fire off the request to the server. We get the result, and then it's just finishing off for each list item in my items collection. And let's do a console.write line. Let's say the item between square brackets, the title, and plus maybe a space, plus item between square brackets. Let's say the city of the trainer, like that. That's okay. And at the end, the console.read line, so I can show you the result. And did I miss something? Okay, thanks. You know, an audience is the best IntelliSense that you can get when you're doing demos. So, okay, so once again, my very sexy user interface. We can see Levin and we can see Kevin, who are both living in Ghent, and Jan and Wim are not being displayed because, well, those names do not have an E. So my demo actually works. Now, once again, remember the thing that I taught you earlier. We need to think about efficiency. Also, when you're going to load data from lists by making use of the technique that I just showed you, if you already know that you're already interested in the title and the city, you can specify that only the title and the city property values for all your list items should be retrieved. Otherwise, every single column value for all the metadata that you defined in your list or document library are being sent from your server back to your client, which may be too much. Over here, you see a small code snippet that will actually allow you to do that. In your context.load method, as an additional parameter, you can specify the properties that you would like to include in your return value. Yes, there is the opportunity there. So the question is, what about paging, basically? So if you've got like 10,000 items, do you need to retrieve them all in once? No, just like if you build a SQL query, you can specify I'm using pages of 50, and I would like to have page number 5. Okay. So that's supported. Okay, let me try to continue. I was talking about some different tips. So if you would like to only make use of some fields, like over here, title and status, and you can make use of the create all items query method that will just give you a camel query, which will retrieve basically all the list items or documents from your SharePoint list or your SharePoint document library. Let's very quickly show you that. So let's get rid of this ugly XML. And over here, I can just make use of camel query dot create all items query like this, which is going to give me a brand new instance that already includes the correct XML. And there we go. We've got the results. Okay. Let's continue. At this point in time, I only showed you that you could read data from lists and document libraries or your webs, that kind of stuff. But of course, it's also possible to write data back to SharePoint. Now, over here, you see two code snippets. The first code snippet is going to update a list item. And you can do that by just changing a property value. For example, if you have a title property or a title column, you can change that. One thing that you must not forget is to call the update method. And that's going to make sure that the client context will know that you have updated an item. And when you've got the next execute query method of your client context, the data will be sent back and it will get updated. Of course, you can also create new list items with the code snippet that I've got over here. Notice that in the add item method of my list, there is a parameter that you need to pass, which is an instance of the list item creation information. I just made use of the blank constructor. Why would you make use of list item creation information object with some custom properties in the case that you are making use of a folder, for example? If you've got folders in your list or document libraries, you can specify where that item should be created. Very quickly, let's try to do an update over here as well. So let's leave this code. Let's specify over here in my items. Let's grab the first item. Let's say the title is equal to I was updated. And let's call the update method. And let's say, let's say over here in my list dot add item. List item, that should be like this. And let's specify that for the new item, the title should be equal to I am new. And let's also call the update method over there. And don't forget to call execute query once again. And in this case, we're not executing a query, we're just sending some batches of commands back to the server. Let's execute my code. Okay, we see the results, but if I go back to SharePoint and I refresh the data over there, as you can see, I was updated and I am new is being displayed over here. Okay. Okay, so to come back to the question that I already got during the little interruption, what about authentication? Well, in this case, in the code that I wrote, the user that was actually running my client application, the console application, those user credentials were passed to SharePoint. So I'm logged in with a specific user. That user in Windows executes a certain application. Credentials of your users by default are passed to SharePoint. And that's how the server object model by default is also working. But it is possible to specify that in your code, what kind of authentication that you would like to make use of. You can make use of anonymous authentication as well. Well, basically, you're not using authentication in that case. For example, if you would like to access public websites. And you can also make use of forms authentication. You probably know that SharePoint already in 2007 supports forms authentication. So you can do that by making use of the object model as well. If you make use of forms authentication, of course, you need to specify a forms account to log in with. And you can do that by setting the forms authentication login info property of your client context. And you can just build a new one, providing a username and a password and all the information that you would like to send back to your server. So forms authentication is totally supported inside the client-side object model as well. I don't know if I answer your question with this slide, but I think so, yeah. Some more stuff that you can do with the clients. I'm not going to move anymore. Some more stuff you can do with the client-side object model in the .NET framework. You can also create new lists. You can modify lists by adding new columns, for example. And it's even possible to extend the ECB menu as well. You know the ECB menu, that is that little drop-down menu that you've got for list items and for documents. So by just making use of the client-side object model, you can also have an impact on that functionality. You can also move around web parts, add web parts, remove web parts, that kind of stuff. So I didn't show you everything what's in the client-side object model. I just showed you the most important concepts, I think. Okay. So far, for the .NET object model, the next question... Sorry, is there something like? No, there is not something like run with elevated privileges, because that would be very dangerous. If somebody would say, well, okay, I'm going to connect to your SharePoint server and please give me administrative privileges. No, that's not working. Question?
So if you use plain text authentication,
I think so. I never tried myself. So probably yes, but I cannot guarantee that. No, you're talking about. No, you can only modify and delete menu items through the client-side object model that are added using the client-side object model, not the out-of-the-box one that are added by making use of a feature.
So,
and how do you do that with a feature?
No,
then you cannot make use of this technique to remove it. So extending the ECB basically still works the same as in 2007. We just have this small addition, but it will only allow you to manage ECB menu items that are created using the object model. No, you will not have access to it. No. Question? Question is, can you extend the client-side object model? Yes and no. Let's say mechanism that will allow you to build a new class and deploy it somewhere so it's available on the client as well. Yes, well, it's basically based on WCF. So if you build your own server, a service, and your own client object model that accesses your own web service, then yes, but you will not... have the opportunity to ship your class, let's say, together with the client-side object model of Microsoft. Okay. Cool. So I started to talk about the next flavor that I would like to discuss with you guys, ECMAScript or JavaScript. You can find a pretty big JavaScript file in the SharePoint root. It's called sp.js. And if you load sp.js, automatically some other JavaScript files are being added. Now, big difference if you compare this JavaScript file to the JavaScript file that we had in SharePoint 2007 already is the fact that the JavaScript file that is available in SharePoint 2010 is now also available in a minified version. You know, if you open up the JavaScript file of SharePoint 2007, you can read all the function names. Maybe there are even some comments. So it's a pretty big file. But in SharePoint 2010, that JavaScript file has been minified, so the names of the methods and the properties are, well, very, very short, which makes it very unreadable. But there is also a debug version of the JavaScript files. So if you switch in the web.config the mode to debug, automatically SharePoint will load all the debug JavaScript files. And, if you have an exception in your JavaScript code, it will be more readable, let's say. I really can't move. Okay, now where would you like to make use of the JavaScript object model? Well, the thing is, the pages in which you make use of that JavaScript file have to be loaded in the context of SharePoint. So basically, you can do that in application pages and in site pages. You can also do it in WebArts, because WebArts are also loaded in pages that are running in SharePoint. And also a very nice extensibility option, I think, in SharePoint 2010 is the dialog framework. You can build custom extensions on top of the ribbon. You can build notifications. You can build real dialogs that will pop up. In those things, of course, you can also make use of the client-side script, which is, very interesting. One small tip that I would like to give you. You're going to notice that, when you're going to write JavaScript, if you're used to writing C# or VBNet code, JavaScript is... not as nice as writing a C#, because it doesn't get compiled. IntelliSense is not that great as it is for C# or VBNet. And if you would like to simplify the JavaScript code that you're going to write to modify, for example, the user interface, I recommend you to check out some of the frameworks that will make your JavaScript easier to write. I'm a very big fan of jQuery. It's an open source JavaScript library. Or in the ASP.NET Ajax framework from Microsoft, you can also find the JavaScript library that will make it easier for you to modify the user interface, for example. Now, let me just jump in to my demo. It's my second demo. So this is basically a SharePoint project that is deploying an application page. So let's open up this application page. It's a very small application page. For the people that have never heard about an application page, it's just a page that lives in the SharePoint root, so in your 14 folder, in your program files. This is everything that I've got in my application page so far. Let me show you the user interface. In the page title, in title area, content placeholder, and in the page title, content placeholder, I just specified that my page was named demo application page. Very exciting. And then, most important, in the main, the placeholder main, I defined a little bit of HTML. I've got an empty bulleted list. I've got an empty div, and both of them have a specific ID. And I've got an input element of the type button, and the button is going to say, get me some data. And when I click on the button in JavaScript, I'm going to make a call to the get data function. That's the UI. So once again, not very, very sexy, but a little bit better already, I think, than the console application. So what else do did I specify on my page? Very important. I've got, typically in my placeholder additional page head, a script link that I've added. And the script link is going to make sure that, in this case, sp.js is included in the HTML that is being rendered and sent back to your browser. On the second line, I also have a script link for jQuery, the latest version, which has been released, I think, a couple of days ago. Don't pay attention to jQuery yet. First of all, I'm not going to make use of jQuery at all. The getData method is going to make use of the sp.js JavaScript file. And as you can see, I just need to create a client context, and I can do that by making use of sp.clientContext.getCurrent. Now, this is the client-side object model that we've got in JavaScript. And from the client context, I can get a web, I can get all the lists, and I can specify, well, load, in this case, all the lists. And then we're going to execute our query, but by making use of JavaScript, we're going to execute our query asynchronously. So we will actually fire off the request and get the result from a server on a background thread. Because we've got an asynchronous method, we need to have a callback for success and a callback for failure. And when we've got success, we're going to execute this code. And when we've got failure, we're just going to display something went wrong, which is, well, we should include the exception. You get the ID. Now, what's the thing that we're going to do when the data is received? Well, I'm going to build an enumerator. And the enumerator is going to loop over all the lists that are available for the site. See, I got the get lists method, which is going to return all the lists for my site. And I'm going to, well, store the title of the list in a variable called item title and the item count of my list also in a variable. And what I can do, very annoying, I can specify just alert, for example, item title. And let me quickly deploy my application page. No, it's... It's not WSP Builder, the tool that I used. You know, typically when you're in Visual Studio 2010 building a SharePoint project, you right-click to get it deployed, and you click on Deploy, and then you go out for a coffee, and when you come back, everything is deployed. No, well, not that bad anymore. But what I installed is actually a pretty nice extension for Visual Studio 2010. It's called SPVSX. VSX, yeah. You can get it from CodePlex. Which is basically going to give you some of the options that you can recognize from WSP Builder, like the quick deploy to the SharePoint root, to the GAG, that kind of stuff. Okay, so this is my page with my very exciting button, and if I click get me some data, you will see that I get a message box for every list and every document library that's available on this site. Okay, there we go. Now, of course, we would like to make this a little bit nicer. And what I can do, instead of displaying that alert, let's get rid of it. I can go, let me speed up things a little bit, grab this piece of code. And this little piece of code is actually making use of jQuery. This dollar character is actually a jQuery function, which is going to select an HTML element with ID myUL, that was in my HTML. And in that element, I'm going to append a new HTML element of the type li, which is a list item. and I'm going to have the item title in that list item, and as an attribute, I can have the item count equal to the item count variable as well. So what is this thing going to do? Well, if I now right-click and wait a couple of seconds, there we go, and do a quick deploy, refresh my data. When I click my button, as you can see, all the lists and document libraries are being displayed in this bulleted list. Notice that there is no postback. So when I click the button, I actually make a call to my server using JavaScript, get the result, and display that result inside this HTML. Now, I can see you guys are not yet really impressed. Let's go one step further. Let's move this over here. Some other jQuery magic. What I'm going to do over here is I'm going to make use of the click event for all the list items that I've got in my bulleted list. And when I click on an item, I will actually set the text of the myDiff element. And I'm going to specify that, well, the text should be this list has, and then I'm going to retrieve the item count. Remember, I have the item count as an attribute, items. A little bit of jQuery magic, and if I deploy this one as well, refresh. Over here, I've got my items. And when I now click on one of those items, you can see that at the bottom, maybe let's increase it, I've got this list has 0 items. If I go for tasks, there's 1 task and 5 trainers, all without making use of postbacks. Okay. Okay, cool. Oh, don't move. You can do much more stuff with jQuery, and I really had time to discuss jQuery with you guys, but maybe another time. Okay. Next version, next question. Same story as in the .NET CLR version. You can specify which properties should be loaded by including some extra methods in the load. Some extra parameters in the load method. So it's the same story. You don't have lambda expressions, but there is an include function that you can call on your list, and then just as parameters of that include, you can specify the column names. So syntax a little bit different, but the story exactly the same. Okay. Final version of the client-side object models that I would like to discuss with you guys is the SilverLite flavor. The SilverLite version of the object models also comes in 2 assemblies, which you can find once again in your SharePoint root in template layouts client bin. You've got SharePoint client SilverLite and SharePoint client SilverLite.runtime, and you need to have a reference to both of those versions. Once again, the code is pretty much the same as all the code that we discussed earlier in this session. The only thing that you have to be aware of that if you make a call using the client-side object model of SharePoint, that call to your server will run in a background thread, as in JavaScript. But because of the fact that in SilverLite that call runs on a background thread, you cannot modify the user interface thread on that background thread. That's just the same as in Windows applications. You've got that issue over there. What you need to do is you need to make use of an invoke that will actually marshal your background thread back to your UI thread so you can modify your UI thread. I will show you that code. It's not very difficult in just a second. So let me open up my third demo over here, which is, of course, that SilverLite application. Okay, those guys can get to the beer already. No worries, that's my final demo. Okay, so I've got a very basic SilverLite control that I'm going to build very quickly. Okay, so this is my XAML. In my XAML, I'm just defining a list box, and I'm going to make use of data binding in this list box. And so I've got defined a item template. And in that item template, for every item, I'm going to display a stack panel. And a stack panel in SilverLite will allow me to align controls. So I will align controls in a vertical way. I've got the text block, and I've got another stack panel. In the first text block, I will actually data bind the text property with a title property. So every object that gets data bound with my item in my list box, well, the title property is retrieved and being displayed. In the second stack panel, I'm going to display in a horizontal way two text blocks. The first one is going to display items in this list. The second one, once again, will be data bound with a property called item count. And for those of you who paid attention to my earlier demos, that are actually properties that you've got on your list instance, on your list instances in the client-side object model. So basically, I will allow my code to data mine all the lists, for example, of a specific website in this list box. The code that I have to write to accomplish this, pretty basic. Okay, I prepared already a little bit of code. You can see I've got the using of my client context, exactly the same as in the .NET CLR version. I get all my lists, and then I make use of the execute query async method, which will have two callbacks, just like in JavaScript. I've got over here success, I've got fail. And notice that when I would like to modify the user interface from those background threads, I need to make use of the dispatcher to marshal the thread back to the UI thread. Once again, this can be done by making use of a small lambda expression. And over here, I'm going to specify, I would like to set the item source property of my list box to all the lists that I got in return of my call. If something goes wrong, I will display oops together with the message that hopefully explains to me what went wrong. So far, so good. Let's build my code. For the people that know a little bit about Silverlight, you probably know that the Silverlight application gets built into a single file with the XAP extension or .xap. You can compare that a little bit with the Flash file, SWF. It's, the same thing, but better, of course. So I can actually open up. I don't have to open up that XAP file. What I'm going to do, I'm going to navigate to this document library, and you didn't see my test earlier today. This is an empty document library, and in this document library, I'm just going to upload the XAP file, which is actually my compiled Silverlight application, demo3.xap, so I'm not fooling you. This is really the one that I just compiled. Let's click upload. And I'm going to right-click on this item to copy the shortcut to the XAP file to the clipboard. Why do I do that? Well, SharePoint comes out of the box with a web part that can display a Silverlight application. And I'm going to show you that web part. Let's add it, for example, over here. Let's insert a new web part. Let's go to media and content. Over here, we've got the Silverlight web part. Let's add this one. And if you add the Silverlight web part, you just point to the location of a XAP file. So this is just the XAP file that I uploaded to the document library. And I will get an error. That's okay. I was expecting that one. No worries. It will go away. It's a small issue with the beta. I'm going to set the width to not adjustable. Let's hit OK. And let's save this page. And you will notice when I save the page, the error goes away. And I've got over here a very fancy Silverlight control that will display for all the lists the item count as well. If I would have some time, I could extend the Silverlight control even more, that if you click on the list, the items would be displayed. You could add items, stuff like that. I think it's a great developer opportunity as well. If you're interested in this kind of stuff, I mean Silverlight, accessing SharePoint data, visualizing SharePoint data in an interesting way, I recommend you to come to my session tomorrow in the afternoon. It's titled Silverlight and SharePoint Better Together. So we're going to do lots more of that kind of stuff. For now, I would like to show you my last couple of slides that I've got over here. Some side notes about the client-side object model. I don't know if you guys have heard already about Sandbox Solutions. If not, check them out. Sandbox Solutions is a new deployment technique in SharePoint 2010, which will allow you to deploy solutions without the need to have server administrative privileges. So even site collection administrators will be able to deploy WSPs. WSPs can include Silverlight applications. Sandbox Solutions, better, can include applications using the JavaScript object model. And of course, that is going to give you a very interesting scenario as well, I think. Also tomorrow, we're going to see some more demos related to Silverlight, and we're going to see that Silverlight now can also run out of the browser, so you can even build Silverlight applications without hosting them in SharePoint. Once again, come back to my next session tomorrow when you're interested in this kind of stuff as well. Some additional resources that I would like to point to. On Channel 9, there is a bunch of very interesting SharePoint 2010 content, and I already pointed you to the related session from tomorrow. Final thing that I need to do, I need to ask you guys to fill out your evaluation forms and make sure you drop them downstairs with, I think, in a very big box. And if you're lucky, you can get an Xbox, because later on today, during the community event, I think somebody will get an Xbox, and that's what I was told, so if it's not true, please don't shoot me. And I really recommend you to stay around a little bit longer, because U2U is very happy to be able to sponsor the SharePoint community event with some Belgian beer, so you guys can taste some real beer as well. And of course, I would like to thank you for attending this session. I hope you enjoyed it.